Hello, everybody. Welcome to the only podcast where you definitely did not press a button. I'm one of your two amazing bug testers slash QAs, Da Purple Sharpie, and I'm here with my literal supervisor,
Saki Sakura. I'm mashing buttons all the time.
All the time, dude. But look, absolutely no proof. No proof whatsoever. So, Saki, I gotta ask, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's Friday, which is the time of this recording, and I'm chilling. I'm ready for the weekend. There's a lot to cover, and honestly, all of it's pretty cool to cover.
I think it's really, really cool. Why don't you go ahead and get into it? What's the very first thing that caught your eye this last couple of weeks?
So for me, I would have to say, coming off of an offline from TNS, commentary, right? Like, we're always talking about commentary and how it's been just progressively evolving, especially since the pandemic, right? But one specific commentary tweet that I saw was from Sejam, and is on the topic of commentary. One of the biggest things missing currently is mentorship for the current or next generation to help get them to where they need to be. It's happened for a bunch of reasons, but a big thing I'm trying to figure out is how I can help with. Now, right off the bat, when I saw this tweet, I was first thinking of Persia and her EXO Academy, simply because one of the best commentators right now, especially for like Tekken, is Iambic, who has grown the ranks for, I want to say, like within the last maybe 2 years, especially with recently the end of Tekken 7's World Tour. And I've also seen just the good of how well that mentorship that happens in EXO Academy, how much good it does for the women that are in getting into commentary and kind of need that stepping stone, right? So first and foremost, you know, shout outs to Persia and that program, right? And secondly, I don't really think the issue is so much about mentorship. Mm-hmm. It's more about this expectation going into commentary and thinking that it's like an easy thing to get into. It's easy to climb the ranks. And, you know, it's such a nuanced topic, but it's one of those things where, like, it's a lot more than just putting down one solution, right?
Oh, for sure. No, and I'm really happy you actually shouted out Iambic, because in EXO Academy, which, like you said, was Persia's, like, brainchild that she created, what was that now, like, 3, 4, 5 years ago, almost, where mm-hmm. it was like she was literally trying to help empower women inside the community. It was sponsored by Red Bull and everything like that. And that incentive, I think, helped not just Iambic, but also commentators like Romanova, Marine. We had quite a few people sign up for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, mind you, again, I actually got to know about EXO Academy more during the pandemic when everything went online, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, for me, while I wasn't really able to actually to get into the academy, it's because the games that I was commentating at the time, which is like Mortal Kombat, wasn't really the available games for that academy. But still, that is such a good resource, because the stuff that they did get to post, especially with those videos with Iambic, the coaching sessions, the back and forth on talking about, you know, how to present yourself, like that was still good knowledge that when I got to review it later, helped me shape into the commentator that I am today. Despite, again, not really being able to be in that same game for like Tekken and Street Fighter and whatnot. And I think that more than anything, it was such a really, really helpful resource, but mostly just for the fact that like, it was there for the women that wanted to get into this industry and actually get into commentary from the get-go. So, you know, there is mentorship opportunities. And I feel like when we look at how the community works in and how you can like reach out, I feel like a lot of the members of commentary, you can actually be like, hey, you know, can you review my commentary? Like, I'm in a Discord right now. That's the commentators Discord, where they have a lot of online TOs and even some offline TOs. They're always looking for like, hey, we have this event going on. There's an actual section that has where you can do commentary reviews and be like, hey, can you review my commentary reel? Or hey, can you give me some pointers here? And like, I think that the actual issue, once again, kind of going back to that Sejam tweet and looking at it with all of that info in mind, it's, again, it's just a lot more than just about mentorship. If anything, it's just how the industry navigates itself. And that kind of brings me to the next tweet from Wonder Chef, who I actually thought was a really good context and viewpoint, especially with what's happening in the career of commentators. So we'll take a read right now. It says, I know the FGC is starting to get a lot of career commentators, and this is no shade at all to them, but I wish we had more people on the mic again who deeply love their game and are worse at talking rather than people who've only played a game a bit but are good at talking. And WonderChef actually goes on to explain a little bit further on what he means. And he says, honestly, that's always been one of my favorite things about FGC commentary and something that makes it unique to me. Ideally, if you have the best of both worlds, I'm just seeing a lot of times where it's one over the other right now. I just want to see passion. And that actually brings up a great point that actually happens when we talk about like, hey, why didn't I get selected to be put in for a commentator position at like Combo Breaker or at like CEO or all of these major events. Right now, the industry is looking not just how passionate you are about the game, but can you present yourself in the manner that they want you to present? And that's what those career commentators are. They're the professional commentators, and I'm gonna do the air bunny quotes of professional, because professional can mean many things. It can mean that you're that go-to commentator for that specific company. It could also mean that you're that specific commentator for that specific game, right? So having that as your, like, I only need to know a little bit about the game and really just tell the story versus actually saying, hey, I know the game enough that I'm going to be able to translate that to you. And I think that that's where right now, as the industry is, it's not so much, again, on that mentorship. It's all about, like, can you present yourself the way that you need to present yourself as a commentator?
Absolutely. I kind of, honestly, at a loss here. I feel like you covered that segment completely and totally by yourself. I think you said everything that I could think to possibly add in that situation. Kudos to Saki. Let's go. Let's hear it for Saki's very first segment. Dude, that was godlike. I mean, wish I had a better, more succinct segue for you for this very next section. But truthfully, I think commentary is going to be something that people struggle with finding the ins and outs with all the time. You know, it's really hard, especially when you've already proven yourself like multiple times for one game or another game, to be like, oh man, I want to do this game now, and you have to prove it all over again. And I feel like you said, companies are moving past the can you talk, do you like this game, are you great. It's like, are you comfortable doing ad sponsor ad cuts? Are you comfortable throwing to another segment? Are you comfortable having conversations when there's no content visible, you know? And I'm sure, like you so also stated, it's one of those things that's only going to require more as we get along the way. Are there any events that you can think of that have really contributed to your success outside of the online realm? I know you mentioned EXO Academy, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to mention a few more.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think the perfect event that really told me, hey, yes, I know the game, but my personality and who I am as a commentator is what got me. And that was Evo. And the reason why I say Evo is because not only was I on that broadcast for Mortal Kombat 11, I was also on the PlayStation Lounge. And I was literally like a personality talking about, hey, yeah, like we're watching a bunch of different games. I think the real point too was there was a moment where like I was watching Melty Blood commentary Melty Blood gameplay. And Juyuno was like right next to me, and he was starting to get into like the technical stuff about Melty, but then something hyped happened on the Melty, like on the side of the gameplay. And I was like, yeah, this is really cool because literally that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the point that like, I feel like a lot of people, when they get into commentary, they do get discouraged, but this is where as like, commentators like yourself and like myself, we tell them, hey, don't get discouraged that you didn't get picked. Instead, build yourself up. Mm-hmm. You know the game. In fact, that's you're already on like ahead of that competition. Now we just need to build yourself up. Show your personality. Don't just be like, and you know, I'm going to kind of put like an image in the mind, but don't be like the nerd that comes into class and be like with like all his glasses and with the books and everything and is like, yeah, so this is plus because of XYZ reasons and why you should impress. No, be hype about it. Show why this is so interesting for you to talk about and why the audience should know, hey, you can't press here because you're going to get messed up.
Exactly. Now, the commentary's job is to tell the audience when to be hype, not just to know everything. And I think something you also touched on there is like taking a while and understanding your talents. It's so incredibly important to know when you need to take a break and like work on something and come back bigger and better than ever, which brings me to my very next point. Multiverses is back, baby! We got a really, really, really cool hype moment from the official Multiverses trailer where they went ahead and broadcast the news that yes, Multiverses is coming back. As of May 28th, we are getting a complete and total relaunch of your favorite platformer, Game of the Year of 2022, Multiverses, the Warner Brothers platform fighting game. I'm personally very, very invested in this and incredibly excited. But one of the things that I'm the hypest about, to be honest, is that they've also stated that this was going to be a 100% free-to-play model, meaning that all the cosmetics that you have inside of here that you had previously will still be there. They'll still be available, but all the character unlocks will be free, which I'm incredibly excited about. Now, let me just ask you, Saki, really quickly, is there any characters in Multiverse that like really speak to you personally?
I'm gonna say Finn from Adventure Time.
You're a Finn player? Is that what you literally got on here to say?
Yes.
I hate that so much for us, dude.
Yes, I play Finn unapologetically. I am a Finn player. And look, there he goes. He's right here, ready to go, ready to beat some buns and tough tune baby. I hope that I get Courage the Cowardly Dog one day and then I'll happily be a Courage main. But for now, I'm a Finn main. And honestly, I just like the sword.
Well, the thing is, they did actually show off a few things on this trailer. We got a couple of new updates about a new PvE mode, which you can kind of see the footage of a little bit right here. We also got some really cool, like, brand new stage kind of leaks. Some people are saying that it looks like there's a Dexter's Lab stage because there was a work in progress, like, background that showcased the inside of Dexter's Lab. There were some moments that seemed to be taking place on top of the Powerpuff stage and stuff like that. So it's like, they've already updated so much. We also got confirmation that the game was recreated inside of Unreal Engine 5. And that is personally exciting to me as someone who is like, okay, yeah, I absolutely love all of the features inside of Unreal Engine 5. And I've been talking nonstop to other developers who are making their game inside of here and have a bunch of different lighting options, above a bunch of different filter options. All of that stuff is available inside of Unreal Engine 5. And it just allows for a significantly much more polished product. But I'm incredibly excited about it, truthfully. And it sounds like you're incredibly excited for a super duper unfun, unfair character. I hate that for you. But, you know, it's your truth. It's your truth. It is what it is. All right. I get it. I understand. But speaking about Multiverses coming out, there was another fighting game, I believe, that was kind of leaked. Well, I shouldn't say leaked. That's a very strong word. What I should say is announced earlier. Do you want to go ahead and tell us which one it was?
Absolutely. So anime fans, we got another anime fighting game, and that is Hunter x Hunter. Then Impact. Now, this is actually what's really exciting about this is one we've talked about, especially in the last episode, how important naming your product is, right? Naming your product literally means you're about to get to reality and this product's about to launch, right? So we finally got the full official name of the Hunter x Hunter fighting game. The second biggest news, and I think this is one that all anime, just fans in general that have been asking for a fighting game, is really excited about. It is not an arena fighter. Instead, it is a 2D fighter.
That's actually really cool because some of the moments that they showed off would be really, really fun in 3D, but having it be like a 2D, like 2v2 type fighter or 2v3 or a 3v3 type fighter would be even better, you know?
Exactly. So a lot of people are saying that it's looking to be like a 3v3 fighter similar to Marvel, because it is by the same devs. I believe it's Nexon, if I'm not mistaken. But the real big thing here from this official announcement coming from their socials, it's just the fact that we got confirmation that it's not going to be, you know, your Naruto Storm or Jujutsu Kaisen or even Demon Slayer type fighting game, which are all arena fighters. Instead, you're going to have that crazy 2D mix-up potential, going to be able to bring in assists is, again, the hope, right? But just the fact that we're going to be able to get that is huge. And like we mentioned, once you get closer to more details and more information coming out, means that we're getting closer to a launch.
Are there any characters that you're excited to play inside of the Hunter x Hunter fighting game? But I should start off by asking, have you seen Hunter x Hunter?
So I have not seen Hunter x Hunter because I'm more of shoujo and slice of life anime otaku, mm-hmm. With a little bit of mix of like horror and action and whatnot. But so for me, this is more about supporting the product, because I want more anime games to have this style in the future, right? So my end goal is to get another Sailor Moon fighting game. That's another Sailor.
You are bonkers. You know, the very first Sailor Moon game that is currently out right now, it is absolutely insanely busted. That game came out, when did it come out? In like the early 90s?
Late yeah, 90s, it was early like 2000s. Super late 90s, yeah. Early 2000s, yeah.
And it's crazy because it's like I was watching people play at Combo Breaker for like, you know, just fun shits and giggles. And it was like one of those things where I was like, what's the counterplay to that? And they're like, you know, don't get hit. And I said, what? They said, yeah, the counterplay is they never patched this game. Like, what? That just exists? Are you kidding me? I'm telling you right now, Saki, you're a menace.
I am. I admit it. I never said I wasn't. I just don't talk about it loudly.
I get it. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I think one of the teams that I'm the most excited for has to be a Gon. I really hope we get like Black Ant inside of there. That'd be really cool. Or the Ant King. I don't remember his name. I thought it was Black Ant, but I don't remember. And then it would also have to be if we could get Gon's dad as a playable character, that would be really, really cool. Now, I know you have no clue what I'm saying, Saki, but for any of our listeners who have seen Hunter x Hunter, it'd be really cool if you guys went ahead and just left a message underneath our YouTube video letting us know what character you would like to play inside of Hunter x Hunter, or what your team would look like. I think team-based fighting games are so optimal, and I'm not just saying that because I play Skullgirls and Dragon Ball FighterZ and am very excited for 2XKO. I'm definitely not just saying it because of that. I definitely don't have a type. I have a type. I'm sorry. I lied on this cast, okay? I do. Honestly, I really, really do like team fighting games. I think they run really well. I think they allow a certain amount of synergy in general. And I think they also allow a certain amount of, like, freedom to players to think through really complex problems by making a custom team that can address certain problems and issues that you may have as a personalized player, which I always think is great. But let me just ask, as we wrap up on this final aspect here, Saki, are you excited to possibly play a team fighting game outside of 2XKO? Like, is this Hunter x Hunter game kind of like, are you going to try it out? I know you said previously, like, you're excited for the concept of possibly just having more anime fighters and more animes being translated into fighting games. But is there another aspect that you're possibly really excited about when it comes to the gameplay?
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited to straight up support. Like I said, support doesn't just mean buy it and have it sitting on my like Steam shelf. I actually will be looking to get some matches in, as well as learning the team fighting aspect. It's not my first experience with team fighters. Like, I've played Power Rangers Battle for the Grid, and I kind of understand a little bit on the team fighters dynamic. I think for me, it's the one touch of death is not my fan. Like, I'm not a fan of it, but you know, it's okay. We get through it. But other than that, like, absolutely. I'm just happy that we're, because like, I see Dragon Ball FighterZ and how well it does, mm-hmm. for the community, but also just for like how it represents the anime. And I'm excited that there's a chance the Hunter x Hunter can do that too. So
it'll be really exciting to see for sure. But we're going to move on to one of our final topics of the day, which is actually, I believe we have footage of the newest event to proc this year, Red Bull Kumite. Red Bull Kumite actually announced that they're going to be doing a Street Fighter Kumite March 16th and March 17th, the day after we record this. Now, this is huge news because not only did they go ahead and announce that it's going to be Street Fighter, they released some really cool custom art that I'm showing off on the screen right here, which, Saki, I just got to be 100% completely and totally honest with you. This is some killer looking art. Like, this looks super duper cool to me, just as an aside. You know, I really love the comic book vibes that they're going with, and everything inside of the bit is just like super duper like heroes versus villains, which brings me to my next point. They literally have a team of heroes and villains. The villain team is consistent of Rob TV, L.I. Joe, Abu, Persia, you have Zeep. These are all like well-known commentators in general, which I thought was really, really funny. It was kind of like rebranding all these people. For those of you who don't know Persia was one of the very first women to ever commentate events like Evo, NEC, a lot of the OG like FGC events. She was responsible for commentating, which was really, really cool. And she'll be hosting the event in general. But we also, of course, have the Heroes team, which is made up of a bunch of players and commentators. We have James Chen, F Word, Tasty Steve, Yipes, Justin Wong, and Logan. And all of these people are a part of that secret organization called the Heroes team, which I always thought was really, really cool. I really like the fact that they're kind of doing like this little, you know, spicy bit when it comes to everything. I'm a big, big fan, once again, of the entire stylization and idea of it. And hey, if you have not already, at the showing of this podcast, the VODs will be available on both their YouTube and their Twitch. You can go over to twitch.tv/Red Bull, I believe is where it's going to be streamed to, or you can go over to the official Red Bull Gaming YouTube account and actually watch the VODs. You know, I have to say, I'm actually still a really big fan of all the Red Bull events that have been happening because they just had a Tekken one before, you know? So there have been a lot of Red Bull events in general. Are there any events that you've seen that Red Bull's been coming out with since the release of Tekken 8 that have kind of surprised you at all, Saki?
Truthfully, I love seeing that they're going into like the FPS side of things pretty soon. Specifically with like, you know, your common ones like Valorant, Apex and things like that. I was really hyped to see how they were doing Kumite, especially for this weekend at the time of this recording, right? And one thing that, like, I just really love what Red Bull does is it really brings out these, like, personalities in these events. Like, if you kind of look at your, you know, your standard special invitational, there's always more of, like, the, hey, this is about the event, and then we just have these, like, popular people. But when I look at Red Bull Kumite, and I look at everything and how everything's designed, I mean, like, that hero, like, sorry, that villains team is too godlike. Like, you see Rob TV coming in with that, like, blazer, and it's like, oh
that,
my god,
that do look evil, high key. That do look, I was like, honestly, this is kind of a vibe. If we get more events with this type of, like, pre-made storyline, bro, I am key. I am here for it.
It's so good, and it's like, this is, honestly, when I think of what event really represents the FGC, these types of events. This is how you highlight players. This is how you highlight the personality. You still sense that there's a really fun part aspect of it, but also that professional aspect. And both of those lines are clear, consistent, you know. And I'm going to kind of like bring back from the first segment, these are your career commentators, but these are the commentators that love the game.
Very much so. Very, very much so. They absolutely do. And I think, honestly, just having an opportunity to showcase that organically in the FGC is just like literally so important, you know. It's probably one of my favorite things about what makes the FGC the FGC. You know, it's godlike. It's amazing. But yeah, let's go over to even more inside of the game. We have as well the Tekken World Tour, which was able to go ahead and showcase some of their newest information about it. Why don't you go ahead and talk us through it, Saki?
Yeah, this is a big one. This is actually like just hot off of the press. So we got Tekken World Tour 2024 for the first tour of Tekken 8. The first stop is going to be in Canada with the Electric Clash offline that is happening in Canada. It is the first offline stop on April 13th. And then, of course, you have March 19th is when you can actually sign up onto the Tekken World Tour site as a player. So once you get through all of those tournaments, those points will go towards you. Now, one thing I do want to give a heads up to everyone is a couple of things. So we already said that Electric Clash is going to be your first challenger event stop. So if you're one of those competitors that really try to travel to the challenger events to get those points, you're going to want to keep an eye out for Electric Clash. We also have one of the stops, DreamHack Dallas. Now that's actually kind of big because that's one of those events that mixes a lot of like content creation, networking, the industry itself with being a challenger event now for Tekken World Tour. And also, of course, you have USA placements. You have Combo Breaker CEO and Evo for the master events. Now, another big update here is the both rankings format. It's now going to be split up to global and regional. And then the other thing that's also going to be a huge update is the fact that now all stages are random, meaning that when you go into those matches, all your stage selects have to be random. And when you lose a match or when you win a match, you have to go back to stage select to then be on random stage as well.
So I actually want to interrupt here and ask a quick question, Saki, and if you know the answer to it, feel free, but if it's not something we know, then we can, like, you know, tell people to go ahead and watch the video, which they should be watching anyway to keep themselves up to date for things like this. But do you happen to know why they specifically stated that it was going to be random? That just feels like a very, very specific rule and a relatively large change about why they can't just do, hey, why can't we just hit play again? You have to go all the way back to the start of the iteration of the game. Did they state why? At all?
They did not state why. A quick answer, though, for what I think is last year, and honestly what happens in a lot of these tours is a lot of players will choose the stage that is most comfortable to them, right? And in a case like, for example, Tekken 8 that has, I don't even know how many stages, but plenty of them, right? There's a matter of a viewing experience. In Tekken, I think it's even more of a competitive advantage as well. So with each random select, it's not in the favor of anybody versus like if the winner was winning and then the loser tried to change, it can kind of mess with the competitive advantage if that's not a strong map for the winner at the time. So they're really trying to keep it more, at least what I think, keeping it as much as possible fair for this type of competitive that's happening right now with the tour.
Yeah, it makes sense. Really, I've always noticed that Bandai especially has been really, really good about making sure that the competitive integrity of their tournaments is like up to snuff. And, you know, shout outs to the production team that's making sure that everything gets, you know, shown and broadcast in a timely manner. Well, shout outs to the organizational team and the esports branch of Bandai as well for making sure that the actual tournament has quite a bit of integrity and ethics behind it. Awesome shout out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last big change, and this one's actually pretty big considering that Tekken 8 does introduce this, special skills will be allowed in the tour, meaning that those special skills that you've been using to help pretty much make your battles and matchups a little bit easier because you have quick access to those special skills, they're going to be allowed during the tournament as well. And this is kind of goes back to the conversation of how, like, with Modern and Street Fighter, how they have also allowed that easy accessibility so that you can also have a good time while you're competing.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm happy that literally there's been so much forethought when it comes to like the Tekken setup and everything inside of the game. It's really, really cool to see. I just love seeing players be able to have like a fair battleground, you know, when it comes to things like this.
Most definitely, most definitely.
I think, truthfully, we went through all of our topics a lot faster than I expected here. Saki is just so freaking optimal when it comes to these topics. But Saki,
I'm optimal like my combos.
Optimal like the combos where we're definitely not just mashing and we're always plus. Don't challenge it, bro. Never challenge it. We're always plus. But I gotta ask, Saki, I saw that you actually made a small tweet earlier this week talking about a brand new YouTube channel you were creating. What's going on there?
Yes. So with everything going on, I've decided to go ahead and have a secondary YouTube. It is Saki Sakura TV. The only difference between my main YouTube and this one is that my main one, which is just Saki Sakura, that one is just dedicated to fighting games. This new one, which has the TV at the end, is all about otaku culture. So you like anime, you like manga, you like Japanese games. Guess what? So do I. And we're going to play a whole bunch of them. And we're going to cover all of it on this channel.
So let me ask you, is there maybe a couple of videos already available up there right now if someone wanted to watch it? Can you walk us through this video that happens to already be up there? What's going on in here?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad. Yeah, so right now there is a daily upload schedule. Pretty much this is moving all of my otaku content that's on my TikTok into the YouTube. So you're going to see this as well as we're going to actually start streaming. I've been doing late night streams as well. That will also be happening on this channel that is specific to like Japanese horror games, which is what this video is. This is me playing Corpse Party and we're just escaping Kizunami from killing us. So that is what this is all about. And then you're going to see more of these Japanese horror games as well as right now there's actually Love and Deep Space, which is a game, mobile game that I've been working with the developers on because we all love our husbandos,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
So there's already footage of that. And honestly, as soon as you subscribe, there's pretty much going to be daily content. So you're going to be looking forward to a pretty active channel there compared to my fighting game channel that's a little bit more slower and less fast-paced because, again, you know, fighting games, trying to find the right optimal setup for it.
No, I totally get it. You know, Saki, I'm so happy that you're moving forward with, like, making a YouTube channel for your shorts content and some of your, like, non-gaming content. If there's one thing that I absolutely enjoy, it's when fighting game members talk their outside the fighting game community, which brings us to our final topic of the day. One of the Street Fighter's players, I think his name is Yan, and I apologize if I mispronounce it, he actually had some thoughts on Daigo Umehara's book. He said, "Evo champion who? I could write a book. I'm significantly more interesting and more compelling than this. I read this book. It's not good. I'ma write my own book." And you know what? You know what, Saki? I just want to say for the record, even if he literally never, ever, ever writes a book, I'm here for people talking their shit and duking it out inside of the fighting game, inside of like the book writing realm, to be very honest with you. He said, "I'm a washed up player now, but I'm significantly more interested than Daigo ever was." And I said, you know what? I feel that. You know what? I hear that. I really do. I feel like if I were to write a book right now, it would be better than the entire history of Maximilian. I'ma just say it. I'ma just own up to it. I'ma just be real. I think I had a more interesting history than Mike Ross as well. I just don't think people are ready for it.
Can write a better book.
It won't be hard against Maximilian. All I have to do is write a book. I don't think Max has any actual like books out. And he's a sweet guy. I'm not actually trying to say that they're bad. I just thought that this tweet was so funny, dude. It was the funniest. I have never in my entire life heard someone who only presses buttons say, "You know what? Actually, I could write a book better than this other guy who also presses buttons." That was just crazy to me, to be very honest. Saki, what are your thoughts?
I want more people to talk about their experience. I'm always for a opportunity to actually give a side of like what goes into fighting games and what goes into like when you're getting into this competitive mindset. And, you know, everybody has different experiences and they're all unique. So we should definitely
said,
be
talk
writing
more shit. Everybody needs to talk more shit. That's what I'm hearing from you right now, Saki, is that you agree with the shit talking. That's crazy. I love that about you, though. It's godlike. Well, you know, I will say for the record, I think that if you're not talking shit, you're truly not in any way, shape, or form fulfilling your future as an optimal fighting game player. And I think that's just fact. You know, I don't even think anyone can really disagree with that viewpoint. But here's what I will say. We have officially come to the end of this podcast, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of FGC Cast. I want to especially thank all of our Spotify followers, of which there are now, I believe, over 100 of you guys. We also have a 4.9 star rating out of 5 stars on Spotify as well, which thank you so much for that. I really, really appreciate you guys so much. Saki, as the newest member of the FGC cast, how are you feeling about your tenure?
I am feeling really happy. This is something I've been looking forward to for a while, and being able to finally do this has been really good for me. It's been a healthy thing, a healthy project.
Really, really exciting project for sure. Everybody, thank you so much for coming through. And you guys know, as always, we'll see you offline.